This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Chris Graham is the founder and editor of the Augusta Free Press in the Valley. Just talking about the Valley, he joins us on the long line from the other side of these beautiful mountains. Chris, good afternoon.
Coy, good afternoon to you.
Is it as steamy and as hot over there as it is here?
Relatively for the Valley, yes. It's always 5 degrees cooler here, but we don't really know that because we're here all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And what's so interesting, and a lot of people don't realize this, the Valley is higher than Charlottesville. You don't just go over and then come down as far as you came up. You don't come down as much.
Yeah, I think where I'm sitting right now, I'm my office is on the top of the hill in downtown Waynes, where I'm about 1,450 feet up or so. So, yeah, we're nowhere near sea level here. We're in the mountains whether we're on the mountain or not.
Yeah, yeah. And you see any rain yet over your way?
No, it's clouding up pretty good, so we'll be seeing it soon, and we'll send it some of it your way if we can. But we need to get some of it, though, before. You guys have had plenty of rain this week. We haven't had much.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Now, Chris, of course, online at AugustaFreePress.com, we got to talk about Kane. Everybody's talking about it. Governor Kane, we learned that we always sort of knew that he was on this imaginary short list, but we since learned, and it could have been leaked. This could have been, you know, the Obama campaign could be leaking this to see the reaction, but we learned that he's on the short list and is actually in the process of being vetted. What have you learned, and what are your thoughts on this?
Well, everybody I'm talking to in the last couple of days seems to think it was very clearly a leak of some sort. Really, in the light of, well, let's see what people say about this. Let's see what the media says, what the pundits say, and what average Americans say about this. And the response has been interesting. It's been positive. You know, and Tim Kaine is not someone who's known very much on the national stage. He's very popular here in Virginia. A poll a couple months ago done by VCU showed his favorability ratings were right there with Mark Warner's, which kind of surprised me. And it was actually double of where Jim Webb was. This was at a time when Jim Webb seemed to be the leading candidate among the Virginians for vice president. So among Virginians, he's very well regarded, and it seems like, you know, from the people I'm talking to about this, that the feeling is, well, he doesn't really seem to have anything in his record that would jump out at you as any kind of scandals or anything like that. He's had a good record as Richmond mayor, as lieutenant governor, and now as governor. And so, you know, the people I'm hearing from are saying good things about him. And the only question that would be raised is whether or not he brings to the ticket what Barack Obama might need. But it seems like in the calculus that the timing of this announcement, or at least this leak of information about Tim Kaine coming on the heels of Barack Obama's really successful trip overseas, if there was any question about whether or not he needed to use the vice presidential nomination to buttress his foreign policy credentials, it seems like if Tim Kaine is a choice, that he's making the decision that it's more important to play up that change angle that he's really run well on the past 18 months.
Like, here's a true outsider.
Yeah. Yeah,
in
Barack
Tim
Obama
Kaine.
Running as an outsider himself, and certainly Tim Kaine as a governor of a state, whether it be him or the Kansas governor we've heard talk, Sebelius, you know, an outsider, a governor would be an outsider. Tim Kaine has not served in Congress or on Capitol Hill in any respect, but he's also pretty close, just 100 miles down the road from D.C., so
yeah,
there's an interesting angle of that, too.
Well, we're talking with Chris Graham, the editor and founder of the Augusta Free Press, online at AugustaFreePress.com. There was some talk that Webb would be appealing because he would bring, national security cred. He's a former Secretary of the Navy under President Reagan. And then you sort of wonder, well, what is Tim Kaine bringing? He's certainly going to make Barack Obama's chances of winning what is now a swing state, Virginia, or what many are calling a swing state. It could help deliver Virginia. But I think a lot of people aren't aware that Tim Kaine also worked, took time off from college and worked with missionaries somewhere in South America. He speaks fluent Spanish.
Yes.
And can you imagine him out on the campaign trail in Texas and the Southwest speaking Spanish?
Yeah, there's a YouTube video of him introducing Barack Obama to a crowd in fluent Spanish. And also there's the aspect, too, I think it's being overlooked. I mean, here in Virginia, it was actually made an issue by Jerry Kilgore a couple of years ago in their gubernatorial race about his Catholicism. There were some whispers around that issue. Of course, he's pro-life, which is an interesting dynamic to bring to this ticket, with Barack Obama being pro-choice. He's also someone who's had to wrestle with his religion and also his political philosophies on the death penalty issue. Of course, there's been a number of executions, particularly this year, that Tim Kaine, who is someone who's personally opposed to the death penalty, has had to sign off on because he said during his campaign for governor in 2005, if, you know, the law of the state is what it is, he'll follow the law of the state. So he brings some interesting centrist street cred, I think, to a campaign that, if there's one criticism of Barack Obama, that you could, if you could put all the criticism down to one thing, it would be that he's a progressive candidate. He's among the more progressive liberal candidates you've seen running on the Democratic ticket in some time. And so, yeah, here's someone in Tim Kaine who can bring that centrist credibility that perhaps he needs.
Interesting. Very interesting. And so what would be the fallout then? We're talking with Chris Graham, Augusta Free Press. What would be the fallout in Virginia if Tim Kaine was asked to join that campaign? He probably will, in all likelihood. What would happen immediately? Would Bill Bowling, lieutenant governor, take over that spot?
Well, yeah, I think the easy way to sum this up will be everything we know right now about Virginia politics in the 2009 election cycle is bunk. Bill Bowling would ascend as Tim Kaine would be elected. Let's assume he's elected in November. Bill Bowling becomes governor, and then there's this gentleman's agreement. It's been talked about a lot in the press. Larry Sabatow has confirmed it. I talked to a couple of people today who confirmed that they were told when Bill Bowling and Bob McDonnell worked out their deal on the governor's race in 2009 that it was implied between them as well that if Bill Bowling was governor for whatever reason when the next cycle came around, that Bob McDonnell would run for re-election as attorney general, and Bill Bowling would essentially run as an incumbent. He would run for re-election for governor. So that changes the dynamics, certainly on the Republican side.
Wow.
Agree.
That would be, yeah, huge, because right now as it is, they've sort of got a gentleman's agreement that Bill Bowling will run for re-election as LG, lieutenant governor, and Bill Bowling would, we can assume, would get the nomination for governor.
Yeah, there's nobody
I'm
else
sorry,
announced
Bob McDonnell. Bob McDonnell,
right. There's nobody else who has announced in those two races. In fact, there were some people who were talking about starting nomination runs towards the lieutenant governor's nomination when it was assumed at the time that Bill Bowling might challenge Bob McDonnell, and those people have backed out. So suddenly the calculus changes very much. Ken Cuccinelli, for example, he's been actively running for the Republican nomination for Attorney General. That ends immediately upon, I think almost immediately upon Tim Kaine becoming vice presidential nominee, because you have to assume it would be really tough for Cuccinelli to continue to campaign and raise money with the uncertainty, a huge uncertainty hanging over the head with Tim Kaine and Bill Bowling and Bob McDonnell situations changing there. Suddenly then some people need to ramp up really quickly a run on the Republican side for the lieutenant governor nomination. Right now there were some names thrown out there earlier in the cycle, but those people have all stepped away. They'd have to ramp a campaign up pretty quick. There's two people already on the Democratic side who've got campaigns going there. So, yeah, there's a lot of things affected by this.
Amazing. It would be huge.
It would be huge,
yeah. We're talking with Chris Graham of the Augusta Free Press. Chris, you've done some work recently, some terrific work looking at speculation in the oil market. Help us understand this, because you know, we hear all there's different reasons for oil skyrocketing in the last few years, but one of the things that you hear on the list is speculation. What exactly are we talking about when we say that? What does it mean?
Well, a few years ago, in the interregnum between the 2000 presidential election, the recount, and the inauguration of George W. Bush, very quietly, a legislation was passed by then a Republican Congress, but still President Clinton was still in place as president. It was in December of 2000 that essentially we've called it the Enron loophole, and it opened up energy security trading futures markets to Enron. That they were the ones who were pushing for this, and we've all known anybody who's followed the news in recent years has heard about how they cornered the energy market in California, for example, using this loophole. Well, a little known but becoming more widely known factor there as well has been the speculation on oil futures trading, and there's a lot of talk among economists that up to anywhere between 30% and 50% of the current price of a barrel of oil is tied directly to the impact of speculation. You know, basically, they're not even trading oil; they're just betting on what oil is going to cost, say, 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, and this is bidding up. It's creating, I guess, it's creating forces on the supply and demand part of how the economy works. By that has nothing to do with the extraction of oil, with the refining of oil, simply just on what it might cost in a few months, a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road. So 30% to 50%. When you start doing some math on that, you know, right now oil's trading in the range of $125 per barrel. You know, you're talking about $40 to $60 per barrel. And in fact, the chairman of ExxonMobil has said, you know, supply and demand factors do dictate that oil should be around $60 per barrel. That's up from the $24 per barrel that we saw in 2002 when gas prices were about $1.20 per gallon. But you take 30% to 50% off of what we're paying on gas right now, you're talking anywhere between $2.20, $2.30, up to $2.50 or $2.60 per gallon we're paying. I don't know there's anybody anybody out there listening right now who would have a problem paying that per gas for a gallon of gas right now.
So the folks who say, well, we just need, you know, and there's a lot of them out there, that we just need the free market, the market, let the market, let supply and demand rule it. Well, if that was the case, oil would be 30% to 50% less than it is now.
That's true, and of course we're talking a lot now. We're trying to decide as a nation: do we worry about the speculation issue first, or do we worry about the drilling issue first? And certainly, a lot of talk about drilling in Anwar, offshore drilling, some drilling domestically in Colorado, and some places internally. The Energy Administration, the Department of Energy, the Energy Information Administration, under President Bush's own administration right now, is saying that any impact from drilling that would commence essentially now, you know, it would be something that would be ramped up in the next 3 or 4 years. It takes some time to, you know, get some things in place. But we wouldn't see impact in terms of the impact on a gallon of gasoline, a price of a gallon of gasoline, from efforts begun right now until 2030. Now, there's nobody really out there estimating, well, how long is it going to take for us to get the speculative bubble down? You know, anywhere from 6 months to a year. So it seems like, you know, I think more people are starting to get aware, become aware of this. You know, polls last month even had, 70% of the American public saying, well, we need to worry about drilling first. As there's more information out there about the speculative bubble, the impact on speculation and how it impacts on the price of a gallon of gasoline, polling today from Gallup shows that now America's split on this. So, you know, the more information we get out about this, I think the better informed an American public can be. And we can see that there can be some immediate impact. I'm not sure it's going to be 30 to 50%, but even if it's 20%, we're talking about, you know, 50, 60 cents a gallon. And that puts prices back into the $3 a gallon range and, of course, has impact on the cost of goods and services across the board. Everything we buy these days in America is shipped by vehicle. So, you know, we're talking about impact on the whole economy, where I think impact on the housing market, because it's costing us more to go to the grocery store, and that's pushing some people, of course, into foreclosure. So impact across the board by this, and I think as a result, I just hope more people become aware of this. The Republicans in the Senate last week filibustered legislation that would have gone down this line because they wanted to have a rider attached to this pushing drilling. Of course, Democrats and Republicans are arguing this issue between themselves. I hope Congress gets the message. We just need to work through the issue. It's not about partisan politics right now.
Chris Graham, Augusta Free Press, is my guest, and I got to tell you, I walked away from a jar of peanut butter in the grocery store yesterday because it was almost $6.
Wow!
For a thing of peanut butter.
If peanut butter is $6, then something is fundamentally out of whack with our economic system.
So if I understand what you're saying, and I don't understand this whole issue, but if I understand from your point, Wall Street's sort of doing with the price of gas what Enron did with the price of electricity in California.
Yeah, what's happening is that there are traders out there, and they're not on Wall Street. That's the problem. They're using that loophole to use unregulated markets overseas and offshore here, the Caribbean and places like that, that are outside the reach of U.S. regulators to essentially just bet on the price of oil. And the thought is that if we put more stringent regulations in place, and in fact, the legislation that was being talked about in Congress last week that was filibustered in the Senate would have added teeth not only to actual regulations, but would have also put more regulators in the field. And so put more bodies on the streets to be able to investigate, you know, cases that come up, that come to the attention of the federal government, so that we can actually go pursue these kinds of cases. But yeah, right now, it's we're essentially allowing a wild west of speculation to artificially raise prices. Now, there's certainly impact on supply and demand. We've heard all the talk about China and India, and as they increase their domestic production of manufacturing and that kind of thing, and as more of their cars are on the roads, there's definitely an impact on that. Worldwide global demand for oil is up since 2002, but not to the point where a barrel of oil should be five or six times what it was in 2002, and that's what we're seeing right now. And maybe half of that is because of simply market forces related to speculation.
Amazing, which is not the free market. That's one thing I think we need to underscore. That's not the free market. That's artificially inflated supply and demand. It's not true supply and demand.
It has nothing to do with the cost of extracting the oil out of the ground, producing the product, refining it, getting it into, you know, people's gas tanks. It's all about simply, you know, the cost of it has nothing to do with, it actually has nothing to do with anything related to the cost of producing or using the oil. And it's everything to do with simply being able to make money off of the cost of oil.
Chris Graham, Augusta Free Press. Tell us what you've done some work as well on offshore drilling. What would that mean for Virginia?
What that would mean for Virginia, actually, this even impacts into the Virginia transportation debate. Legislation that was proposed during the recent special session by Delegate Chris Saxman, who's actually over from the Stanton area, over here in our neck of the woods, that would tie any royalties that Virginia would get from offshore drilling to the Transportation Trust Fund. Right now, essentially, the money, if, as it currently stands under state law, any money from royalties for offshore drilling that would be paid to the state would simply go into the general fund. And so, you know, I guess it's hard now because for those of us who support seeing more activity in our transportation sector, you know, I think there are probably ideological similarities for those people who also probably philosophically opposed to offshore drilling. But I think this is an interesting approach to things, to try to tie those two issues together. There could be substantial impact. Virginia is one of the more attractive areas on the East Coast, certainly, for offshore drilling potential, at least. So the state could actually end up benefiting from this, and it could have a role in our transportation debate that's been stalled for the last few years.
And how? What exactly do the proponents want? You wouldn't sit on Virginia Beach and see oil towers out there, would you?
No, we're talking about a few miles offshore, simply doing what other nations do in terms of how other countries approach their continental shelves. You know, right now we only look a couple of miles out, and I think you're talking 12 miles out. So it should be something that, you know, I say this, and I'm probably going to risk getting some letters and emails from people who are more environmentally conscious than I. But when you're talking about 12 miles out, I'm not sure that you see that direct impact. Certainly there's environmental impact anytime you drill into the ground or drill into the ocean and disturb the ecosystem. But I think proponents of offshore drilling would say that the impact would be limited.
Right, certainly limited there at the beach.
At the beach, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we see oil slicks making their way up to the sand level, but if we do, then, you know, everything we've been hearing and the reason we've had this moratorium for the past, 25 or 30 years, the reasoning will be valid then. But I think, just based on what I'm reading, that the fear of that would be somewhat limited.
Chris Graham, the Augusta Free Press, online at AugustaFreePress.com. Before we let you go, you've also done some work recently looking at, you know, back to gas prices and how they relate to the costs of manufacturing in America.
Yeah, you know, an interesting trend that some economists are pointing out, and I've talked with economic development directors in our area here and also statewide, that as the cost of shipping from whether it be Mexico or certainly the Asian countries, which have taken away a lot of our you know, manufacturing business the last couple of decades, really, as the cost of shipping go up, and of course also other internal factors in these countries, standards of living are going up in Latin America and also Asia, the cost per unit to produce goods in those countries is not as competitive with U.S. domestic manufacturing as it has been. So there may actually be a positive benefit to these higher oil prices and gas prices in that it may, and it seems to already be having some effect, at least in the decision-making processes of those worldwide manufacturers, to say, if we want to reach the U.S. market, maybe it's more cost-efficient for us to reach the U.S. market by producing, again, in the U.S. So I think there are economic development folks who are looking at this and saying, there's an opportunity here for a return of U.S. domestic manufacturing that we would not have been able to foresee if these fuel prices weren't so out of line.
Because it's so expensive to get the stuff back into the U.S. market.
That's what it's seeming to be. Yeah, the shipping cost and then of course the trucking cost. We can't underestimate when goods are shipped to a port, they still have to, because of the way our system is, we don't rely on rail, we rely on trucks to get things from place to place. That cost is added onto those costs, and so if you can strategically locate plants, you know, throughout the United States in the different regions, you can cut on your shipping costs tremendously in this market. And so even though you tend to pay U.S. workers more than you'll pay the workers in, say, China or Korea or Mexico or another Latin American country, you know, those costs are more than made up for by the, you know, $4 a gallon gas we're paying right now. So interesting how one little factor can throw everything else into such disarray.
Chris Graham is the founder and editor of the Augusta Free Press. You can read his investigative research online at AugustaFreePress.com. Chris, always enjoy it. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.